everyone. My name is Reese Garlinski, and this is Young History, episode 165 on Spain. The capital of this country is Madrid, and I'm going to get really quickly into the name of this country and how we got there. So the name Spain originated from the Roman province of Hispania, which was established on the Iberian Peninsula, and then it derived from the Phoenician word span, which meant hidden or remote. During the Middle Ages, the name Hispania evolved into various forms in different languages. In Spanish, the term Hispania gradually transformed into España, while in Portuguese it became Espana. By the 1500s, España had become the standard name for the kingdom ruled by the Catholic monarchs Isabel I of Castile and Ferdinand II of Aragon. And because they united different Christian kingdoms on the Iberian Peninsula, this was now one strong unit, which we know as Spain from that point forward. And Spain is the second most visited country in the entire world, just behind France. And Spain gets about 83 million annual visitors. Some other facts is that, although being very controversial, bullfighting has been a traditional sport and cultural spectacle in Spain for centuries. The most famous bullfighting event takes place during the annual San Fermín Festival in Pamplona, where bulls run through the streets, and it's a kind of rite of passage to compete in this and try not to die. Spain also hosts one of the world's most famous food fights. La Tomatina is held annually in the town of Bunol near Valencia, and thousands of participants gather to throw overripe tomatoes at each other in a friendly and messy battle. And Spain is also famous for its siesta culture, where many businesses and shops close for a few hours in the afternoon to allow people to rest during the hottest part of the day. This tradition originated as a way to escape the heat and has become a part of the Spanish lifestyle that is very widely recognized. And with all that being said, I don't want to dilly-dally anymore. As you can imagine, with Spain, the country that starts the Age of Discovery and all sorts of things like that, we've got a lot of history to get through here, so I don't want to dilly-dally anymore than I usually do, but we're going to get right into it. With that being said, though, I am very glad you guys are here. I'm very glad you are giving me a chance to explain some Spanish history, and it's going to be fun. So, shout out to lots of people out there who have a connection to Spain, either through, you know, way back in the bloodline or very recently. And I'll do a special shout out at the end for some special people. So, nonetheless, glad you guys are here. And with that being said, my name is Reese Garlinski. This is Young History, and this is Spain. Hope you guys enjoy. Our origins begin around 15,000 BC, or earlier, which is when indigenous people left some of the most artistic and easily noticeable cave paintings in the entire world. They were found at the Altamira Caves and are an extremely important part of the puzzle that tells us what it was like in Spain before early civilizations. However, the earliest distinguishable people groups were the Iberians that inhabited the eastern and southern coast. They created some ancient language script, swords, walls, beautiful scriptures, and also domesticated horses. They created some ancient language script, crafted swords, built walls, and domesticated horses. One of the most well-preserved things they made was actually a sculpture of a woman, and she kind of has this big headdress on the side of her ears. And it's kind of been used as like the standard representation for Iberian people because it's one of the only physical items we have from that period. And at the same time, there were also the Celts that inhabited the central and northern part of the peninsula. And there was the Tartessians, who inhabited only the northwestern corner of the Iberian Peninsula. Eventually, Phoenician and Greek settlements would be separately established on the eastern coast of Spain that touched the Mediterranean. The city of Cadiz was established by the Phoenicians in 1104 BC. It is one of the longest continually inhabited cities in Western Europe. The Carthaginian Empire was established in the city of Carthage once Phoenicia fell. The city of Carthage was a Phoenician city created in modern-day Tunisia. The Carthaginians spread their empire across the entire southern coast of the Iberian Peninsula from here. Carthaginian customs, which were focused on seafaring and trade, became a major part of the Iberian system. Hamilcar Barca expanded Carthaginian rule across most of the Iberian Peninsula, and the Carthaginians controlled this portion of Europe until the Punic Wars. The Punic Wars were fought between Carthage and Rome in three separate occasions from 264 BC until 145 BC. Between 208 and 201 BC, Spain was one of the theaters of the war between these two great powers. For 15 years, the commander of Carthage, famously named Hannibal, used Spain as the crossing point between Carthage and the Alps. It was here that he transported large war elephants as part of his invasion on the Italian peninsula. Here, the Battle of Lipa was fought. It was the most definitive defeat the Carthaginians took in Spain. 50,000 men were captured or killed, and Rome was able to establish its hegemony over the entire peninsula. However, their hegemony was only established in the parts that Carthage controlled. The rest of the Iberian Peninsula did not recognize Roman rule and resisted very hard. The indigenous people groups did not take kindly to their land being trampled on by some new Latin foreigners. So for 200 years after the Punic Wars end, Rome waged wars across the peninsula to officially conquer all of it and subjugate anyone who resisted it. The Latin language was spread and it became the basis for Spanish, the language of Spain. But once all this fighting was done, Spain was a part of the Pax Romana. It was known as the Roman Peace, and it lasted from 20 BC until about 180 CE. It was about 200 years of peace across the Roman Empire and saw extreme advancement of almost all territories. The Iberian Peninsula was rapidly advanced and saw Roman culture take root. Road systems, aqueducts, temples to the gods, and other great influences of the Roman Empire made their way into the Iberian Peninsula. This influence that came from this huge Latin Empire meant that new languages and cultures would be formed across the Iberian Peninsula. From west to east, there was the language and cultures of Galician, Castilian Spanish, and Catalan. On top of this, the early parts of the current era brought Christianity across the entire peninsula. Some major parts of modern Roman and Italian culture were brought initially by Spain, such as different styles to use and prepare fish, wine, bread, and tomatoes. And it seems that tomatoes were actually grown first in the Iberian Peninsula and then introduced to the Italian one. Spain also birthed Trajan, who became one of the greatest Roman emperors. Trajan is the emperor that expanded Rome to its geographical and territorial peak when he was ruling. And, like I said with the tomatoes, despite us associating most dishes that use tomatoes with Italy, it is actually Spain that originated the use of tomatoes as a part of a culinary cuisine. The Visigoths were a Germanic people group that fell upon Italy as soon as Rome collapsed in the 400 CE. They were eventually pushed out of parts of Western Europe by the Franks and ended up settling in the Iberian Peninsula. They fled into the city of Toledo in 542 CE and established their control across Greater Iberia. For the next two centuries, the Visigoths would defend against invasions from European powers, including the Eastern Roman Byzantine Empire. The Byzantines hoped to reconquer all of the land lost by the Roman Empire to reestablish proper Roman rule. Byzantium was unable to conquer the entire peninsula, but they did establish the southern coastal colony of Spania as part of the new Roman Empire. The Visigoths were noted for their acceptance of local culture. In 589 CE, King Roderick accepted Christianity, specifically Catholicism, and it became the new religion for the Goths. This helped bind the people of the Iberian Peninsula and the Visigoths into a much more homogenized unit. Then in 654 CE, they completed the Visigothic Code. This was a set of laws that heavily accepted the Roman system of law in many ways. Once these two major shifts happened, the lines between Visigoth and Iberian descendant living in the peninsula became very blurry. So now there was a new people group formed between the unity of the Visigoths and anyone living in the Iberian Peninsula. And this new people group was called the Hispani. However, there was still the Basque Kingdom of the North that did not homogenize into the new culture. The Basques, from this point and throughout the rest of history, just have a different culture and flavor than the rest of Spain. The Basques spoke a language that predated Latin and the Indo-European family, so it is one of those unique languages that doesn't connect to anything we even see traces of today. So because of that, it's remained a very unique culture. Issues began to rise in the Visigothic kingdom as a succession crisis occurred under King Roderick. This divided the kingdom and left it vulnerable to invasion. The Umayyad Caliphate had spread its influence across all of North Africa since the death of Muhammad in the 600s. In 711 CE, Tariq ibn Zayad, an Umayyad governor, got information out of the Spanish city of Ceuta in Morocco in order to launch an invasion on Iberia. He launched an invasion across the Strait of Gibraltar with 10,000 men made up mostly of Amazigh warriors from North America. King Roderick and his forces were defeated by the Umayyad army, and the Visigoth kingdom was disestablished. By 717 CE, the entire peninsula was conquered by the Caliphate, except for the small kingdom of Asturias in the north. The kingdom was officially established in 722. This came after the few remaining Christians won the major battle of Covadonga against the Umayyad Caliphate. They were able to establish this kingdom in the north as a stronghold of Christianity and a resistance to Umayyad rule. Nonetheless, Al-Andalus was established. It is a name given to the Iberian Peninsula in the time of Muslim rule, which lasted from the initial invasion all the way until 1492. The Umayyads established the Damascus Caliphate to rule over the Iberian Peninsula. And not to get too deep into history that happens in the Middle East and out of Saudi Arabia, but eventually the Umayyads fall because of their leaders becoming very weak and strong leaders passing away. So the Abbasids actually come to take over all the land that was once the Umayyads, and they took power across the entire Umayyad Empire and shifted the power of the Caliphate to Baghdad instead of its basis in Saudi Arabia. But when this happened, Abd al-Rahman I, one of the few surviving Umayyad leaders, actually established his own independent emirate on the Iberian Peninsula, and he continued to call it Al-Andalus. The capital was established at Cordoba in 756 CE, and Rahman successfully defended his emirates from the Abbasids that tried to reconquer it, and he established a successful dynasty. The Umayyad dynasty, as it was aptly named, lasted for about 200 years after Rahman established it. Rahman also constructed the Cordoba Mosque, which is one of the most large and grandiose Muslim structures in the entire world, even to this day. The library within the mosque was home to many scholars that made great advancements in every area of academia. But then trouble arose in the south. The Almoravids led a large conquest across the Straits of Gibraltar into the peninsula and successfully conquered the south and eastern coast. Almoravids would continue to influence the southern part of Spain for their entire existence, and their existence I cover very heavily on my episode Morocco, so check that out as well. But nonetheless, Al-Andalus was ruled by very forgiving monarchs who accepted the existence of both Jews and Christians. Both of these people were allowed to worship within the Emirates as long as they paid the special tax. There was a very mixed population that made up Al-Andalus, because there was people who were descendants of Europeans, there was Amazigh, people from the northern part of Africa, and there was many different Arabs and Muslim descendants, all sorts of different people groups. So because of this, there was actually a lot of resistance to Muslim rule. Different uprisings happened, there were protests. Nothing came of it for a very long time, but they were still pretty frequent, despite Arab rule being very long-lasting. And next we get to Abd al-Rahman III. He oversaw the emirate at its absolute peak of splendor. Also during this time, the military was under the command of Al-Manzor. He destroyed many ports of the cathedral at Santiago de Compostela. He destroyed many ports of the cathedral at Santiago de Compostela, and he famously ordered the Christians within to carry the doors and bells back to the Mosque of Cordoba so that these pieces could be incorporated into the Grand Mosque. This occurred in 997 CE. However, it would be in reaction to this great act of power that the Christian resistance in the peninsula stepped up. The small Christian kingdoms that had been nothing more than strongholds since the 700s rose up as a real challenge to Muslim rule. And this began a new era in Spanish history, known as the Christian Reconquista. The Reconquista of Spain technically began with the creation of the Kingdom of Asturias back in 722. However, it would not be until the section we're about to discuss that much more progress in actually reconquering the Iberian Peninsula occurred. One of the most significant leaders was Commander Rodrigo Díaz de Vivar. For his success, he was named El Cid, or the Lord. The Reconquista would not get any real momentum until the successful takeover of Toledo in 1085. It was led by Alfonso VI, who was named King of Leon, Castile, and Galicia. Stories of his triumph have risen up into legendary status, and the northern states expanded south to push the Muslim state into smaller pieces. The Muslim state broke from one large unit that was strongly unified into the Taifa states and continued to shrink from there. The Almohads successfully reunited the Taifa states into the Almohad Caliphate. The Almohads launched a convert or kill doctrine that was enacted across their territories. This caused tens of thousands of Jews and Christians to seek refuge in the Spanish territories. All of this made the Caliphate unable to stop the expansion of Spanish states. A crusade was launched against the Almohads from 1212 to 1250. From there, the conquest would be continuously successful as Cordoba was taken in 1236, Valencia was taken in 1238, and Seville was taken in 1248. By this point, the script had been flipped. Only the small section of Granada and southern Iberia still belonged under Muslim rule. As Christian rule was reestablished, more kingdoms were made to divide the power across the peninsula. The different kingdoms that were formed were the Kingdom of Castilla and Aragon, as well as the Basque Kingdom of Navarre. These kingdoms united behind the idea of a Christian Iberia, but often fought each other when interests clashed. One of the biggest moments, not only in the history of the Reconquista, but in the history of Spain, was the marriage between Ferdinand II of Aragon and Isabella of Castile. The marriage occurred on October 19th, 1469. This was extremely significant because Isabella of Castile was the production of the Kingdom of Leon and Castile assimilating into one. Ferdinand II was previously King of Aragon, which was a Habsburg possession in Spain, so the marriage to Isabella not only created Spain, but added it to the Habsburg Empire. The Basque Kingdom of Navarre was also united into the Spanish Kingdom. The marriage between Isabella and Ferdinand took two of the strongest leaders on the Iberian Peninsula and made them into one even stronger unit. The strong unity between Isabella and Ferdinand made the kingdom the strongest it had ever been. And it also made the military force the strongest it had ever been as well. On January 2nd, 1492, the Catholic forces of the peninsula were finally able to push out Granada and end Muslim rule in the peninsula. Following this, there would be the expulsion of the Moors. The Moors is the name given to African Muslims who lived in Western Europe. After the Muslim powers were removed from Castile, there were still about 500,000 Moors, which lived in the peninsula. Over the next 20 years, 100,000 of these people would be killed in battles, 200,000 would be deported, and only 200,000 were able to remain in Castile. And then we move into the Age of Discovery. Then we move into another major point in history, which is the beginning of the Age of Discovery. In 1492, Christopher Columbus, an Italian explorer, had traveled across Europe to have a crazy trip funded. He wanted to sail west in hopes to find a new route to Asia, specifically the eastern part of India. Isabella and Ferdinand would eventually jointly agree to fund this crazy venture. Starting in 1492, Christopher Columbus would launch the first of his four voyages to the New World. When he arrived, it was not India that he found, but the landmasses of the Western Hemisphere. And with that, the Spanish Empire was born. Within 40 years, the Spanish had rocked the New World. The Inca and Aztec empires were forcibly collapsed, and almost all the Americas were conquered. Spain had full control of most of the Caribbean, all of Central America, most of North America, and the entire western half of South America. On top of this, the empire started to expand into other parts of the world. They had made a great influence in the Philippines, which they made into a colony, and they had some holdings on the African continent. All of this expansion brought into question morality and how people should be treated around the world. One of the people who stood up for this was Bartolomé de las Casas. He was a Spanish Dominican friar, which meant he was a member of the Augustinian Church. He was born in Spain and then moved to Hispaniola, specifically the side that becomes the Dominican Republic. He played a role in administering the island as a worker in the encomienda system. Encomienda was a system of taking native people as a labor force for Spanish settlement. Las Casas underwent a profound spiritual transformation after witnessing the brutal treatment and exploitation of indigenous peoples by Spanish colonizers. He eventually renounced the encomienda and entered the Dominican Order. He dedicated himself to the defense of indigenous rights and the promotion of Christian values of justice and compassion. Las Casas wrote extensively about the atrocities committed against the indigenous people in the Americas, particularly in his seminal work, A Short Account of the Destruction of the Indies. In this book, he documented the violent conquest, enslavement, and genocide perpetrated by Spanish conquistadors against indigenous populations. Throughout his life, Las Casas tirelessly advocated for legal and social reform to protect indigenous rights and improve their living condition. He did propose alternative forms of labor. In a very contradictory way, he suggested the importation of African slaves as a means to alleviate the suffering of the indigenous peoples. Although he would later regret this suggestion due to the harsh treatment of African slaves as well, which we all saw coming. But nonetheless, Bartolomé de las Casas is remembered as one of the earliest and most influential critics of the European colonization and imperialism. The conquest of the Canary Islands occurred throughout the 1400s. The Canary Islands were inhabited by indigenous Guanche people at the time of European arrival. These indigenous peoples had a distinct culture and society, living in small tribal communities across the island. These islands were known to Europeans since antiquity, but it was during the 1300s and 1400s that European interest in them grew. The Spanish crown sponsored several expeditions to the Canary Islands in the early 1400s. Motivated by a desire to expand territories, spread Christianity, and gain access to the island's resources, a move was made. The Guanche people fiercely resisted the Spanish invaders, but they were eventually overwhelmed by the superior weaponry, technology, and tactics of the conquistadors. And also, Spanish disease. The conquest was characterized by violence, warfare, and the subjugation of the entire indigenous population. Many Guanches were killed in battle, enslaved, or forcefully converted to Christianity. The conquest was finally completed in 1496. The introduction of European diseases, forced labor, warfare, and cultural assimilation led to a significant decline in the Guanche population, and their traditional way of life was completely eroded. The Canary Islands share a similar story to the Balearic Islands, which are just off the Iberian Peninsula in the Mediterranean. Both of these island groups are still possessions of Spain to this very day. And also around the same time of the early Age of Discovery, there was also the Spanish Inquisition. In 1478, the Pope granted the joint monarchs, Isabella and Ferdinand, the right to root out any heretics, which were non-believers in the Catholic faith. This was the start of the Inquisition, which would last for nearly 400 years. Tribunals were held, which saw a board of Catholic clergymen hold trial over alleged heretics, with an inquisitor and grand inquisitor as the main prosecutors. At first, people were given a chance for mercy if they confessed during the initial 40-day period of an inquisition called an Edict of Grace. An Edict of Grace happened for the first month or so at each new city of the Inquisition. Many confessed and then became the arm of the Inquisition that accused people to defend themselves. Once an accusation was made, people were imprisoned for months to years and had their property stripped away. Internally, Spain began to exile Muslims and Jews with the Convert or Expel laws from the 1492 Alhambra Decree. Throughout the Inquisition, people who were converted from Judaism to Catholicism or were known as conversos. They were continuously persecuted under accusations of practicing Judaism in secret. Then, in 1609, all Moriscos, or Catholics that had converted from Islam, were ordered to leave the peninsula. Nearly 300,000 left, and those that remained faced an even worse fate. The most resistant members of society were named the worst of heretics and got burned at the stake until death. Torture, exile, execution, and community betrayal defined the Inquisition. It would come to an end on July 15, 1834, when it was officially ended by Queen Isabella II, named for the Castilian queen that pioneered the Inquisition. And now jumping back a bit, because we're going to go before the 1800s, back to kind of our chronological history here, there was the 80 Years' War. King Philip I became known as a warmonger of a king. He launched Spain into many battles across the European continent. Because of some of the major military victories and the continued expansion of the empire, Spain had more silver than it had ever had in its entire history. However, the country also started to go bankrupt because of the cost of frequent wars. It would be an understatement to say that the rule of Philip was very contradictory, being both rich and poor at the same time. Philip II was the next king, and he defended Catholicism with his entire empire as he sought to challenge Queen Elizabeth I of England from accepting Protestantism. Philip II also led Spain in major military conflicts. The most notable of them was the 80 Years' War. This war was a series of conflicts that happened across the continent in the 1500s because of the religious split caused by the Protestant Reformation. In 1580, Spain conquered Portugal after King Henry of Portugal died. However, the Spanish Netherlands were also lost by the end of this conflict. Philip II was in power when Spain conquered the Filipino Islands, which were named for the Philippines in honor of King Philip. Outside of Europe, the Spanish Armada won a great victory in 1571 against the Ottomans. This was achieved at the Battle of Lepanto and was seen as a huge victory for Christendom. The Age of Enlightenment and the Renaissance helped push Spain into a time of art, learning, and cultural expansion. This period is known as the Golden Century. Some of the significant figures were Miguel de Cervantes. He is one of the most significant literature artists in the history of Spain. His magnum opus was called Don Quixote. It is widely regarded as the first modern novel and is one of the greatest works of fiction ever. It was first published in two parts in 1605 and 1615. God. When Cervantes wrote Don Quixote, it marked a departure from the conventional style of medieval romances and established new literary techniques that would pioneer generations of future writing. However, it was not all sunshine and rainbows, as politics got very messy at this time. The rich continued to spend a lot of money on beautifying Spain, but not actually bettering the nation. The new economic standing of Spain caused there to be a large gap of wealth nationwide. Inequality became extremely common, which can be seen in the food shortages that happened for the middle and working class of Spain. And then Portugal also gained independence at this time because Spain could barely afford to take care of itself, let alone another country that wanted to be independent. In the early 1700s, there was a huge decline in the amount of silver produced in the Americas, and this further weakened the Spanish economy. Because of the economic struggles, there was massive revolts in Catalonia and Naples. On top of that, issues with the royal family occurred when Carlos II died without producing an heir. And this was the backdrop of the War of Spanish Succession. This war was fought from 1702 to 1713. The war officially began because Philip of Anjou, or Philip V, was next in line for the Spanish throne. However, he was already the monarch of France, so his ascension to the Spanish throne would have made his kingdom the kingdom of both Spain and France, and thus the most powerful entity in all of Europe. The rest of the great powers in Europe got involved in the Spanish Succession War in order to keep a balance of power across the continent. The war killed nearly 1.5 million people and created divides across Europe. Nonetheless, Philip was able to hold onto the crown and he established the Bourbon dynasty. This is still the royal family of Spain to this day. However, the only way this was allowed to happen was that Spain lost the Straits of Gibraltar and agreed to a permanent separation of powers between itself and France. Charles IV ruled Spain in the late 1700s because he was the grandson of Philip V. He launched another war against France in 1793 because the French revolutionaries guillotined Louis XVI, who was his cousin. Eventually, the conflict spread out to other European powers, including Britain. Spain actually switched sides in the war and fought alongside France against the British. This culminated at the Battle of Trafalgar in 1805. And in this battle, Spain and France were both routed by the British Royal Navy. This battle is widely recognized as the end of the Spanish Armada's naval dominance and the birth of the Royal Navy of Britain being the best in the world. The War of the Pyrenees was fought between Spain and the French Republic from 1793 to 1795. This was part of the larger French Revolutionary Wars, which erupted following the French Revolution in 1789. The revolutionary government in France sought to spread revolutionary ideas and overthrow monarchies anywhere they could. Spain, ruled by Charles IV, initially remained neutral in the conflict, but later joined the first coalition against revolutionary France in 1793. The conflict began with the French advances into Spanish territory across the eastern Pyrenees Mountains. The war concluded with the signing of the Treaty of Basel in July of 1795. Under the terms of the treaty, Spain ceded the western part of the island of Hispaniola, which becomes Saint-Domingue, and then Haiti, to France, and also recognized French control over Catalonia. Spain withdrew from the war and made peace with France, although the Treaty of Basel did not bring a formal end to hostilities between France and other European powers. But there is one thing we need to acknowledge, which was the actions of the French Republic at Vendée. It was a massacre that occurred under the French Republic's command. The French revolutionaries and soldiers were ordered to turn Vendée into an uninhabitable desert. The group that went into it were known as the Internal Columns of French soldiers. They marched across Vendée, burned, pillaged, and raped anything they saw fit. They turned Vendée, literally, into an uninhabitable area. It was burned to the ground and thousands were killed. It's one of the nastier things that the French revolutionary forces did outside of France. And the legacy of it still kind of comes up today between Spain and France. But then there was the Napoleonic Wars. The Age of Napoleon began in 1807 when he marched his troops into Spain. He originally claimed that he was just marching through Spain to get to Portugal, but this was not true. Napoleon marched his forces into Madrid and ousted the new king, Philip VII. Napoleon placed his brother, Joseph I, on the Spanish throne. Then there was a war fought against French resistance groups that did not want Joseph on the throne. France continued to control the Spanish crown until 1813, when the constitutional changes were made to limit the power of the king. Napoleon also tried to march his troops into Spain once again, but this was denied the same year. Once Napoleon was deposed, the Spanish monarchy was reestablished, and the first constitution of Spain was abolished. However, the effects of Napoleon on Spain were felt even after his defeat. When the Spanish monarch was overthrown, it prompted many wars of independence across the Americas. Spain permanently lost control of its colonies throughout the early 1800s. On top of this, internal divisions grew across the country between liberals and conservatives who wanted Spain to be ran in a very specific way. The political split manifested into three separate conflicts, known as the Carlist Wars. They were fought in 1833, 1846, and 1872. They are called the Carlist Wars because people that were fighting the war tried to place a leader named Carlos on the throne three separate times. The resistance to this new monarch started the wars. The wars found some success when they abolished the monarchy both in 1868 and 1873. There was also a huge rise in nationalism, especially in the Catalan region, despite thousands of deaths from the war. By this point, Spain was a very weak and divided nation compared to what it had been in the past few centuries. And despite its weakness, Spain still had to fight the young and hungry nation of the United States. The U.S. sent the USS Maine to protect American interests in Cuba while it was under Spanish control. The Maine exploded in February of 1898, the cause of which can still be debated to this day. The U.S. public was enraged, and yellow journalists created the story and slogan, "Remember the Maine and to hell with Spain." More pressure for a reaction was placed on President McKinley, and the U.S. declared war on Spain on April 21st, 1898. In 1898, the Spanish-American War began. Spain did not stand a strong chance against the well-funded industrialized army of the United States of America. Nonetheless, they still fought to keep Cuba and the Philippines under their control as the last great colonies of the Spanish Empire. I cover both of these very extensively when I talked about Cuba, and I will cover the next one very heavily when I do Philippines, so I'm just going to kind of run through this because the U.S. launched a siege on Guantanamo Bay in southern Cuba, and then eventually, once progress was slow at first, and then they launched another invasion west of the bay, and this invasion was where the famous Rough Riders, led by the volunteer army of Theodore Roosevelt, were. And it was a decisive victory won at San Juan Hill, and then from there would just be more and more victories until Cuba was defeated. Puerto Rico was invaded in July, but the battle was a standstill between the invading forces and Spanish forts. And then by the end of August, Spanish forces in Cuba and the Philippines surrendered, and a treaty was signed in December of 1898. As a result, Spain lost its only remaining colonies, Guam, Cuba, Puerto Rico, and the Philippines. The Spanish Empire was dead. This loss caused a lot of division among the people in Spain. New political ideologies were accepted in hopes to solve the issues of the country. Anarchists and social parties were formed and gained a lot of support throughout the next few decades. One of the more aggressive acts during this period saw the anarchists bomb the Liceo Opera House. The bombing of the Opera House, also known as the Grand Teatre de Lu, occurred on November 7, 1893. It happened in Barcelona, Spain. An anarchist named Santiago Salvador threw two Orsini bombs into the crowded theater during a performance. It killed 20 people and caused dozens of injuries. The bombing was a protest against the bourgeoisie and elite class, and it aimed to instigate social change throughout the nation. The anarchists also assassinated Prime Minister Antonio Castillo on August 8, 1897. The assassination was a response to the Prime Minister's repressive politics against anarchists and other hard leftist movements. José Canalejas was a Spanish politician who served as Prime Minister of Spain from 1910 until his assassination in 1912. Canalejas was assassinated on November 12th in Madrid by Manuel Pardinas, who was an anarchist. The assassination shocked the nation and led to increased repression of anarchist movements by the government. Another huge one was the bombing of Alfonso XIII's wedding. The bombing at the wedding of this king occurred on May 31st, 1906, in Madrid. An anarchist named Mateo Morral threw a bomb at the bridal carriage during the wedding. He intended to kill both the king and queen. The bombing missed its target, but killed several bystanders and wounded many others. The incident was very significant in the politics of Spain because the anarchist movement would continuously be repressed, but it would also find more supporters because of those who thought this was the way to solve problems. And that rolled us right into World War I, where Spain remained neutral in World War I in hopes to take care of all the political division it was dealing with and not make itself bankrupt going into another war. General Miguel Primo de Rivera led a military takeover in 1923. He created a dictatorial government that remained in power until 1930. Spain had been continuously experiencing challenges and piracy from the Berber pirates of North Africa, so they started the Rif War. It was fought from 1921 to 1926. It resulted in a major Spanish victory and a near permanent end to Barbary influence in the Mediterranean. Then there was the Wall Street crash that caused the Great Depression, and it pushed Rivera to resign. King Alfonso XIII was forced into exile, and Spain launched itself into a second republic in 1931. They felt that a monarchy could not solve all the issues of the country and would not represent the people well enough. The country was now run by a republican government. Suffrage was given to women, and land redistribution acts were approved. A new constitutional council was formed to write the republic's code of law. However, the republican government moved away from the Catholicism that defined the nation in hopes to reduce power of the church. Then, there was a very quick reaction from the Catholic Church that caused a divide between conservatives and supporters of the Republic. It became very clear that there was no legitimacy within the Republic's ranks. Crime was the backbone of the country, and most political dealings were done undemocratically. Protests against the new Republic gripped the nation in the early 1930s, so an election was organized for 1933. Alejandro Leroux won the election for the Prime Minister position and became it to represent the far right-wing parties. Leroux's government was extremely right-wing and oppressed socialist parties. So these socialist parties organized many strikes and held an uprising in the north. This was the Asturias Revolution of 1934. The uprising was quelled by the army, but divisions still remained. The left-leaning parties united to form the Popular Front as a way to consolidate votes against the right. More uprisings and instability occurred within the government, and the Falange Party formed. It was a radical party molded after the extreme nationalism presented by the fascist parties of Europe. The leader of the monarchist party, Calvo Sotelo, was assassinated in 1936. It prompted a military revolution in July of the same year. A coup was started in Morocco by the elite African army. Because of this, a lot of Spanish troops were sent south to deal with it. The coup was led by Emilio Mola and Francisco Franco. Both were military generals. Mola died and Franco became a cult of personality that led the fervorous rebel force. Thus began the Spanish Civil War. It was directly fought between the rebels, who were known as nationalists, and the government of Spain. Both sought to get their system of government established across all of Spain to a permanent end. At least 300,000 Spaniards died in the war, and hundreds of thousands more died due to the situations caused by the conflict. Atrocities were committed by both sides throughout the war. The rebels, known as the Nationalists, frequently massacred tens of thousands of civilians who supported the Republic. The same thing was done by the Republicans, who sought to silence anyone who tried to support the Nationalists. 7,000 monks and nuns were actually killed by the Republican force for not supporting their cause. There was an early success of the Nationalists, which prompted the creation of the International Brigades. They were an armed group of adventurers that were created by the Communist Party. Despite this, the Nationalist forces pushed across the nation. Portugal, Germany, and Italy supported the Nationalist cause, while the government was backed by the USSR and Mexico. Guarnecia, in northern Spain, was bombarded by a German volunteer force. The bombings were so deadly that they actually killed 5% of the population in that city in just one day. Sometimes, divides happened within the same alliance because of ideological clashes. This happened mainly on the Republican side slash the government side because this one title of the government and Republican side had to represent anarchists, communists, socialists, all different parties under the same umbrella, where nationalists was one very united unit. But nonetheless, by March of 1939, the Nationalist forces had pushed into Madrid. The United Kingdom and France both recognized the legitimacy of the Nationalist government in Spain. However, the government was not recognized or accepted by everyone in Spain itself. The Republican side that lost sought protests and uprisings from the anarchist and communist party that rejected national party rule. Divisions from the Civil War are still seen today because of how brutal the war was. Modern Spanish politics get heated and violent on occasion because of party tensions that never ended and started at this date. But it would be after the war that Francisco Franco created a dictatorship that would last until the 1970s. A one-party state was declared, and no opposition would rise to challenge him. In the early period after the war, over 100,000 people died in prisons across Spain. After this, hundreds of thousands of people would leave Spain in the Republican exiles. Franco moved the nation towards fascism with no hesitation, and was open in supporting the Nazis and fascist Italy by word of mouth. Some reporters suggest Franco's regime aided Nazi operations in the region. Franco, however, was not a full fascist, although he did repress the national movements in Catalonia and the Basque region. He did not take away private property rights or completely eliminate rights to represent oneself. The 1940s hit Spain extremely hard. Francisco Franco refused to have Spain directly participate in World War II, despite his clear support for the Axis powers. There was a time when he negotiated with Hitler because the Nazi chancellor wanted to move forces into the Strait of Gibraltar by going through Spain. However, Franco demanded that all financial debt between Spain and Germany be cleared, and that Germany be the one to bring all the weaponry. This price was considered too high, so Hitler did not accept it. The Allies saw friendly relations between Spain and Nazi Germany, so they marked Spain as a non-ally. This meant that by the time the war ended, Spain was intentionally isolated because it no longer had any friends. Internally, Franco established a system that isolated Spain from international trade and hopes to be fully self-reliant. This did not work. Spain began to fall into deep economic struggle because of the instability and lack of foreign investment. Spain was nearly a starving country by the end of the 1940s. In order to pull itself out of this, the Spanish government allowed U.S. soldiers to build bases for their government at the cost of very expensive land in Spain. There was also economic reforms that shifted Spain towards industrialization. In the end of the 40s and the 50s, the anti-Franco guerrilla forces were formed. They were known as the Maquis. These forces attempted to use rural fighting to challenge Francisco Franco, but they were crushed, and any resistance to Franco ceased until the end of this period. Morocco gained independence in 1956. However, Spain intended to keep Ceuta and Melilla, as well as Ifni in the southern part of Morocco. The Moroccan government was not okay with the idea of these cities remaining under Spanish control. The Moroccan forces invaded Ifni, but were quickly repressed by Spanish forces. However, in the peace negotiations, a lot of the Ifni territory was given up, but Spain controlled the city as well as Ceuta and Melilla. It controls both of the latter two today. However, in the peace treaty, Ifni City was maintained by Spain, but a lot of the territory was given up. Ceuta and Melilla remained under the Spanish control, and they still do to this day. In 1968, Ifni was ceded to Morocco permanently. Also in this year, the Spanish territory of Equatorial Guinea gained independence, and the following year, hard restrictions were placed at the border between Spain and Gibraltar, which continued to be controlled by the British. The economy of Spain started to improve in the 1960s because there was a lot of remittances paid by Spaniards living abroad. There was a lot of foreign investment, and there was a huge boom in the tourism industry. The regime under Franco had been completely centralized. Franco disbanded almost all political units, gave the military a massive budget so that it could keep him in power, and he reestablished dominance of the Catholic Church. In 1965, universities across Spain began to rise up and challenge Francisco Franco in open protest. In the 70s, the ETA, an extremist group hoping to carve out the Basque region within Spain was formed. The Basque historically lived in the northern part of Spain and had very different culture than the average Spaniard. The most significant act committed by the ETA was when, in 1973, they assassinated Carrero Blanco. Blanco was the designated successor to Francisco Franco. After this assassination, Carlos Arias Navarro was chosen as a successor to Franco. He was the grandson of King Alfonso XIII. ETA continued to commit acts of terrorism across Spain, which ended up killing hundreds of people and wounding thousands. In 1975, Francisco Franco finally died, and Carlos Arias Navarro became the leader of the nation. He ascended to the throne as Juan Carlos I. It was also in this year that the monarchy was reestablished, and a move towards democratic moves under a constitutional monarchy would occur. King Juan Carlos I did not align himself with the expectations of Franco. King Carlos selected Adolfo Suarez as his prime minister. Together they began to slowly unravel the system established by the Franco regime. In 1978, he ratified a new constitution which legalized political parties, workers' unions, and strikes. It also disbanded Francisco Franco's political party, the National Movement. Around the same time, there was a huge rise in regional nationalism, especially in the Catalan region. To combat this, Spain was divided up into 17 autonomous communities with their own seat of power in each region. Then there was major steps taken away from the Catholic standard. Gay marriage, contraception, and divorce were all legalized across Spain. And at the same time, we see the Spanish miracle. This term refers to the rapid economic growth and modernization experienced by Spain during the late 1900s and specifically in the 70s. This period of significant economic expansion transformed Spain from a largely agrarian and underdeveloped country into one of the world's largest leading economies. Spain opened up to the global market, pumped money into tourism, and modernized the nation. It also encouraged urban migration, and all of this led to a huge economic jump. Then in the 1980s, Spain was at the heart of the La Movida movement. The La Movida movement was a cultural and social phenomenon that emerged in Spain, specifically in Madrid during the late 1970s and early 1980s, a period of creative and artistic freedom characterized by experimentation, expression, and rejection swept across the area. As the nation moved more towards democracy and a shift away from suppressive authoritarianism, a sense of freedom and openness was felt by artists. La Movida was driven primarily by the younger generation, including artists, musicians, filmmakers, writers, and other creative individuals. It was a reaction against the repression and censorship of the Francisco Franco regime, as well as a celebration of newfound liberties. La Movida encompassed a wide range of artistic expressions and forms, including punk music, new wave, experimental cinema, underground theater, performance arts, photography, and graphic design. The movement was also closely associated with the vibrant nightlife scene of Madrid growing. Particularly in neighborhoods like Malasaña and La Latina, bars, clubs, and alternative spaces became hubs of creativity, social interaction, and they fostered a sense of community among Spaniards. La Movida also challenged the traditional gender roles and norms by advocating for sexual liberation, expansion of LGBTQ rights, and women's empowerment. It provided a platform for marginalized voices to address taboo subjects in Spanish society. La Movida itself used to refer to hanging out at a bar and living out a nightlife. So that's why the movement was named after this. And then back into politics, in 1982, there was an election. It was the first one marked as free and fair in decades, and it produced Felipe González as the new prime minister. Felipe González administered a cabinet that was the first one without a member of the Francisco Franco government. In 1986, Spain joined the European Union. This huge step helped Spain become even more intertwined with its democracy and a stabilized economy. This was the final stamp in shifting Spain from an underdeveloped agrarian nation to a modernized nation with a leading European economy. Politics began to be dominated by two parties, the Socialist Workers' Party, known as PSOE, which represented the leftist ideas, and the PP Party, which represented the conservative right wing. The 1990s and early 2000s marked a lot of economic success for Spain as the system began to stabilize under continued democracy. Nonetheless, the 2008 financial crisis smashed Spain and caused a huge economic downturn. Spain heavily depended on both tourism and construction, which were the industries directly affected by the global financial crisis. Unemployment rose to over 25%, and youth unemployment rates got as high as 60%. All of this culminated in the 2011 election, which saw the conservative PP Party win with candidate Mariano Rajoy. President Rajoy is most well known for the large austerity measures he took, which drained social welfare funding across Spain. A large amount of the population heavily depended upon this system, so Rajoy was widely disapproved by his citizens. A movement was launched against him called Los Indignados, which meant indignant ones. A huge political divide across the nation occurred and a new political party was formed called the Podemos, or the We Can Party, or the We Can Party. And around the same time, a lot of stuff started to happen for the Catalonian independence movement. Catalonia has a long history of autonomy within Spain, with its own distinct institutions and cultural identity. However, tensions between Catalonia and the central Spanish government have existed for even longer. They stem from issues such as taxation, language rights, and central autonomy. The modern Catalonia independence movement gained significant momentum in the early 21st century. It was fueled by factors such as economic disparities, cultural repression, and political grievances. Catalans have expressed dissatisfaction with their perceived lack of recognition and representation within the Spanish state. In 2011, Catalonia held a referendum for independence. Voters turned out in droves and voted in support of an independent state. However, the Spanish government stated that this referendum was unconstitutional and thus invalidated the results. So, more protests occurred and calls for independence got even louder. Several political parties and grassroots organizations advocated for Catalonian independence, including the Catalan Republic Left, which is the ERC, as well as the Together for Catalonia, which is JXCAT, and the Catalan National Assembly, which is ANC. These groups organized rallies, protests, and campaigns to promote their cause of independence. In October 2017, Catalonia held another very controversial referendum on independence. Despite being declared illegal by the Spanish government, the referendum resulted in a majority vote that favored independence. Although turnout was relatively low due to Spanish government efforts to prevent voting, the Spanish government under Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy at the time declared the referendum unconstitutional and took measures to suppress the independence movement. This included deploying police to prevent voting, arrest Catalan leaders, and impose direct rule in Catalonia. The Catalonian independence movement has led to a political impasse between Catalan separatists and the Spanish government. While some Catalan leaders continue to push for the independence of their state through political means, others advocate for dialogue and negotiation with the central government to address their grievances. Today, there are still divisions over how the Spanish government dismissed the independence referendums that would have seen an independent Catalonia established. Well, speaking of independence, we should also talk about the Basque movement. The Basque country has a distinct cultural identity, language, Basque, and history that dates back thousands of years. The region has long sought to preserve its cultural heritage and autonomy despite being incorporated into the Kingdom of Spain back in the 1500s. Basque nationalism reemerged in the 1800s as a response to industrialization, centralization, and cultural assimilation efforts by the Spanish state. Basque nationalists sought to protect and promote Basque language, culture, and traditions, as well as to assert political autonomy and independence for their Basque country. Sabino Arana was a key figure in Basque nationalist movement because he founded the Basque Nationalist Party, PNV, in 1895. Arana's ideology emphasized the uniqueness and superiority of the Basque people, advocating for the creation of a Basque state based on ethnic and cultural identity. During the dictatorship of Francisco Franco, Basque nationalism was heavily suppressed, and the Basque country, along with other regions seeking autonomy, faced severe repression. The Basque language was banned in public institutions, and nationalist movements were continuously suppressed or were forced to operate in exile. Following Franco's death in 1975, Basque nationalism experienced a resurgence. The Basque country was granted significant autonomy within the Spanish state, including its own government, the Basque government, and the Parliament of the Basque, under the state of autonomy of the Basque country. In contemporary politics, the Basque National Party, PNV, remains a prominent political force advocating for Basque interests within Spain. While support for independence has fluctuated over time, nationalist sentiment and demands for greater autonomy persist, particularly among segments of the Basque population. And of course, earlier we mentioned the ETA, who had committed many acts of extremism and terrorism for the sake of getting their political way, which would have been an independent Basque state. But in 2018, the ETA officially disbanded. This came as part of the move towards peace, despite the divisions between the Basque and Spain. Separatists that support the independence of the Basque region continue their movement, but without any violent attacks against the government. Spain has many political divisions to deal with, but it seems that peace is the new flavor of politics in Spain. And since 2013, there has been a quick rise of the Vox Party. The party was founded in 2013 as the far-right option in Spain. It won a significant minority of seats in the government in 2023. The party is heavily opposed by everyone except its supporters because its policies are very heavy on attacking the LGBT community, repressing women's rights, and against migration. This party represents an extremely far-right, very traditional way of governing Spain that most people don't have a flavor for anymore, so it's become an extremely controversial party, and it getting so many seats and continuously having representation leaves a bad taste in the mouth of a lot of people in Spain because it kind of reminds me of not even to get too political, but when Trump won in the U.S., the reaction from Europe was very bad because everyone couldn't believe that the American public had elected this man to be president. And now, on this far side, it's the same thing. Like, this party that is really going traditional and trying to repeal a bunch of rights is getting representation. A lot of people in Spain can't believe that this party is actually still around and is getting so much representation. And another thing Spain had to deal with at this time was actually the 2015 migrant crisis. The migrant crisis in 2015 was part of a larger influx of migrants and refugees into Europe, coming mainly from North Africa and the Middle East because of all the conflict that occurred. While Spain was not as heavily impacted as other European countries like Italy and Greece, there was still a huge increase in migrants who arrived during this period. Syrians, escaping the Syrian civil war and the abuses of al-Bashar, found their way to Spain as often as they could. And with all that being said, that pretty much gets us to the present. Spain is ranked as very high on the Human Development Index and on the Human Quality of Life Index. Spain also has one of the top 10 largest economies in the world. The Catalan and Basque independence movements still divide politics in Spain, but nothing has caused more division than the legacy of the Civil War. Divides across the lines painted by the nationalists and Republicans can still be seen in the fight between leftist and rightist parties today. Sometimes these get violent, sometimes they get corrupt, and there is still a lot of resentment on both sides because of the legacy started by Francisco Franco. But nonetheless, the long and diverse history of Spain has caused it to be one of the most well-known and rich nations in the world. And with that, that gets us to the very end, where I always like to do a takeaway or a mindset from the history, and I say with Spain, that lesson is going to be change the world. I say that as the lesson with Spain because that's what this nation did. You can feel however you want about colonization, about the establishment of the Spanish Empire, about the monarchs, everything, but you cannot deny that Spain changed the world. Spain is the country that originated Spanish, a language that is spoken by literally half of the world. I have a giant world map next to me that I look at all the time, and as I was coming up with what to say, I literally thought, wow, this little tiny country actually influenced the entire Western Hemisphere. So I think that's a good lesson to take with Spain. Throughout its history, this country has always been a pioneer in not only the Age of Discovery, but in, once again, no matter how you feel about it, but the Inquisition, the Reconquista, so many major historical events that set doctrines for the way a lot of other politics would be carried out across Europe, and that means across the world, that you have to give this country its credit for changing the world and being such a part of great change, negative change, but just overall huge shifts. So I say with you, you should try and do the same thing. Whatever area you're in your life, whatever field you're going into, whatever, anything, honestly, hold on to it tight and change the world with it. Just change your industry, change your area, change whatever it is. Make your town better, make your region better, make your club better, make your relationship better. Just change it. Whatever that world is for you, I would love it for you to be the person who changes the whole world. I would love it if you're able to change the entire globe. Think about it more as not only the greater world itself, but small things like the world of dance, the world of music, the world of Broward County, Florida, wherever it is for you or whatever it is for you. Change that world. Change someone's world. Be the first person to love someone fully. Be the first person to take full care of someone. Change different people's worlds. Change the world of different industries. Do all sorts of things like that because then you're going to emulate Spain, which is a country that has influenced the world pretty much more than almost any other one. There's a few that obviously I'm going to cover that have a similar level of influence, but you know, of course, we see that English is spoken around the world because of Britain and the influence of the United States, but Spain is the reason we get whole new people groups, we get languages, we get so much culture, and because of so much history, the world goes back to a lot with Spain since the 1400s. So nonetheless, I say you can do the same thing and just try and change whatever world you're in. And that gets us to the actual end where I just want to sign off. This was a big one, as you guys can tell. This is a very, very big one for me and pretty much for anyone because it's Spain. But I tried to really go deep here. I tried to leave out as little as possible and try to cover anything I feel that really had effects on Spain and was the trip between A and B to C, all that. But, you know, this couldn't be possible without your guys' support, couldn't be possible without all the people who put out great history content. So just thank you to you guys. Thank you to all of them. And I hope you guys enjoyed. Little minor shout out to both Ava and my friend Sophie. Both helped me out with the research for this a little bit. Sophie gave me some insights being a little Spain resident, so much appreciated there. And shout out to Ava as always. But yes, so hope you guys enjoyed. I'm going to sign off now. I'm going to stop yapping, let you guys get on with your day because you've been listening to me talk for an hour and 10 minutes now. But nonetheless, I do hope you guys enjoyed.